accession number 18344, Reel 1.
Richard Pease, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Kirk Green, near Wigan.
Which year was this?
1927.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Kirk Green?
No, we moved to Apollon. My father was working down the coal mines and he came to Apollon looking for work. I was 9 years of age.
So were you in Apollon during the Second World War years?
Yes, yes.
What was it like being a schoolboy or a teenager in Apollon in the Second World War?
Well, it was only a quiet village. There was not... we could see the bombings in Liverpool and hear the aeroplanes going over and things like that, but really it was very quiet in Apollon.
Did the war affect you at all?
No, I don't think so. Only for feeling patriotic and wanting to get in the army.
So no bombs fell on the village?
Not really. One or two incendiary bombs fell on the outside of the village, but not really anything to worry about, you know, no large explosions.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
Well, I volunteered when I was 17.
So that was in 1944?
That's right, yes.
Why did you volunteer for the army?
Well, I came from a family of soldiers. My father was a soldier at that time. His three brothers were soldiers. And my grandfather was an ex-soldier. So it just seemed natural for me to join the army. So at 17 years of age, I went down into Wigan recruiting office and volunteered for the army.
Where did you do the basic training?
The first 6 weeks I did in Maryhill Barracks in Glasgow.
What was the basic training like?
That was all right. I enjoyed it, apart from the inoculations. It was quite enjoyable.
How were you treated by the people in charge of the training?
Well, just normal army, you know, normal army sergeants at that time. It was all right. I wasn't worried about it. I enjoyed it. That's just a basic training to get you to army life.
Do you think the basic training did you any good?
Yeah, oh yes, I'm sure it did. I felt fitter, I felt more grown up, more reliable of myself, you know what I mean? I had more confidence.
How did you take to army discipline?
All right. Yes, I accepted army discipline. I went to Perth to join the Black Watch. That's where I did the 10 weeks infantry training in a place called Kinfauns Castle. And once the infantry training was completed, then you sent to join your battalion.
What did the infantry training consist of?
Well, it was weapon training, physical training, route marches. And how to accept discipline.
Which did you prefer, the basic training or the infantry training?
The infantry training, more interesting. I like the weapon training, with different weapons, different infantry weapons. I like the keep fit side of it. I did the route marches, but I wouldn't say I was pleased with them. You know, I didn't enjoy them, but I did them. They gradually increased it from 2 mile, 5 mile, 10 mile, 20 mile, and so on. I increased the weight of kit that you were carrying.
Did you want to join the Argyles?
No, it was really by chance. I met a man in the recruiting office. Whose father was a sergeant in the Black Watch, and he was joining the Black Watch Regiment to be with his father. And the recruiting sergeant suggested that I go with him. So I accepted his suggestion and went to the Black Watch. But the man who, his name was Rigby, unfortunately failed his medical. So I had to go to the Black Watch on my own. But I was only in the Black Watch a short time. The Burma campaign was still on. And we were trained infantry, then battalion training. And posted to India for jungle training and airborne training, ready to go to Burma. But the war ended, so consequently we stayed in India as regular soldiers.
When were you in India?
Well, I went to India in 1946. Early 46. The war had finished, but we had been prepared for jungle training in England, and then sent out to India, where the jungle training would continue. But the war had ended, so it the jungle training, I suppose, we'd done it for nothing.
What was your battalion in India?
The 2nd Battalion, Black Watch.
And whereabouts were you stationed in India?
Bombay for a short while, and then we went to Karachi, and from Karachi we went to the northwest frontier of India, Peshawar. We stayed in Peshawar for a while, and then we came back to a camp called Malaya, which was again just outside of Karachi. And by this time, it was when India and Pakistan were getting their own rule, you know. It was decided that the battalion would be disbanded, and we were sent home on leave. And when the leave was completed, we were transferred to the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, and sent to the battalion which was serving in Palestine.
Just before we go on to Palestine, if I could ask you some questions about India, please.
Right.
When you were in Bombay, was the Royal Indian Naval Mutiny on?
No. No.
Did you see anything of the disturbances which occurred when India was partitioned?
Not in Bombay.
Or anywhere else in India?
Well, there was a few upheavals whilst we were in Karachi. We were trained in what the regiment termed as IS duties. It's an abbreviation for internal security. And we used to form up in, like the riot police of today do. We had shields and pickaxe handles, rifles and ammunition. We had banners which said in different languages to disperse. And we used to go into the middle of the road and face these people who were protesting and ask them to disperse. On most occasions they did do. We went one day to a disturbance. We're at a railway station, and it seemed like they were Hindus who were trying to get from Pakistan to India, and they'd been massacred on the train, and the old train was full of dead bodies, men, women, children, you know. It wasn't a very nice thing to see, but by the time we got there, the thing had ended, and there was just a destruction to look at. So we got back in trucks and went back up to Karachi.
Where was this railway station?
I don't know. It was somewhere in Pakistan. The name eludes me. I've forgotten the name.
How had these people been killed?
mainly by swords and shot, you know, mainly by swords. I do believe that it was Sikhs, this is hearsay, I don't know, I believe it was Sikhs that had done the atrocity, but I don't know.
Were they just men, or were they also women and children?
It was a total train passengers, you know, men, women, children.
Had the crew been killed as well?
Yes, I would assume that, or I didn't see them. The whole thing was stopped, and there was well, there was bodies lying everywhere. We didn't stay long. We saw the thing, and then it was all over. So we left. We had orders to get back to the trucks. Got back in the trucks and went back to Karachi. Why we were given these orders, I was only a private soldier, I don't know, I was just doing what I was told to do, you know.
Why had you been sent to put a stop to it?
Well, I would assume the riot was still going on, and we would have put a stop to it if it had been still going on while we were there, but whether they knew we were coming and left, I don't know.
Were there any survivors of the massacre?
I didn't see any. If they had, they were in the station or taken away, I don't know, I didn't see any. But there was Indian Army, or I don't know, there was Army personnel that were circulating around, and police, you know. So I don't know what they were doing. We were kind of there on a standby if anything had gone wrong, you know.
Were there many people on this train?
Well, it was packed out. There was lots of people on it. You know how the train travel in India, they're on the sides and on the top and inside. It was quite a number. Mm.
So hundreds?
Hundreds, I would assume that, yeah. Mm. Seemed a lot to looking at them, you know.
What did the soldiers think about this?
I just accepted it. There's nothing. What could I do about it? You know, I accepted that this was part of my army duties, and this was something that we saw, and we just left and left it with it. You know, it's something like, how can you say? Something you see. And really, as private soldiers, I don't think you have much of an opinion. You know, you discussed it amongst ourselves after, you know, saying that looked well and this looked well, you know, but. We had no political opinions. We were just there to do our duty, you know, and do what we were told.
Did you have nightmares about it?
Not that, no.
When you were on these internal security duties in Karachi, what were these people demonstrating about?
Well, it was before the petition, so I didn't understand the language, but I would assume it was to get the Home Rule and get the British out.
Was there any violence or stuff?
No, fortunately, they dispersed when they were told to. No.
Did you see anything else of disturbances in India or Pakistan?
No, that was the only thing I saw. We were posted to the northwest frontier.
What was it like there?
It's not a very nice place. It's very hot. It's very dry. It's very boring. There was only one incident where some Pathans came down in one of these big American Buick cars, and they attacked the native compound where there was a canteen with native servants, canteen manager. There was a tailor, a tattooist, things like that. And they attacked the canteen and shot most of the servants and the manager, and the sole intention was were looting. They stole cigarettes and, I suppose, beers and things like that. They took what they wanted and left. But this only occurred one late afternoon, and it was in the native compound when there were no British troops involved. We got to know about it next day and went to look, but by that time it had all been cleared away.
Was this in Peshawar?
It was on the outskirts of Peshawar, a place called Robertson's Barracks. But it was, as I say, it was a compound where the native tradesmen lived.
So they killed the canteen staff?
Killed the canteen staff and the canteen manager.
Why did they do that? Why didn't they just take the stuff and go?
I don't know. I don't know how Pathan's mind works, you know.
Were there many killed?
I think it was about eight in the canteen, six or eight. It was rumoured, although I didn't see it myself, that the canteen manager was underneath the table. Well, one of the tables, and he'd been shot. And they said all the day's takings were still in his pocket, and they'd missed that. So I don't know whether that's hearsay again.
Which year was this, 46 or 47?
46.
Was there a bad law and order situation then in Peshawar?
No, it was quite relatively quiet.
Any other incidents that happened to you in India or Pakistan?
No, I can't think of anything. We moved back to Karachi. We were living in it was called Malaya Camp, on the outskirts of Karachi, in the Sindh Desert, the desert camp. It was surrounded by a perimeter wire, and inside were tents and buildings, and we lived in that. The only time we left it was we used to go around Karachi in the Saturday evening, go to the pictures and for a drink and things like that. But we never saw any trouble. It was very quiet, really. And then I got sent to a place called Murray. It was a hill station, because I'd been there probably about 15 months, and I was sent to Murray on leave for a month. And that was a beautiful place. It was green, and it was cool, and it was very relaxing. And after we'd been there a month, we returned back to the camp outside of Karachi. And then we were told that some of us were being posted home on Leap. That's halfway through the 3-year stint. So I was fortunate. I was one of them men that was sent home. And I got leave, and told to report back to Redfern Barracks in Edinburgh. I reported back there, where there was, I think there was about 20 odd, 30 men, Black Watch private soldiers, on parade, and the resident sergeant major told us to take down our red hattles and put up instead the Argyll and Southern Highlanders badge, and we were being transferred. So we refused. He said he was going to march us, a lot of us, into the guard room because we refused or disobeyed an order. And then he changed his mind and said he was going to put us in the guard room for mutiny. At this stage, the orderly officer arrived. He was a young man in his 20s, and he was a lieutenant. And he began to talk to us, and he said he would be proud to have so many men serving under him who had so much loyalty to the regiment. And he said he would form a compromise where you take down your red attle, put on the Argyle badge whilst you're on duty through the day, and then in the evening when you walked out, you could put your black watch badge back up again, off duty. So we all agreed to that. We took the red attle down and we put up the Argyle badge. 2 days later we were posted to Palestine to join the 1st Battalion, Argyle and Sutherland Islands, and I never saw the Black Watch again.
When did this incident occur in Edinburgh?
Early 1947. It'd be 1947. I can't tell you the month, I've forgotten.
Now, where were you based in Palestine with the 1st Battalion of the Argyles?
I went to, the first place I went to a place called Jaffa, the old town of Jaffa. I joined B Company. And what I remember about it was that it was a long row of terraced houses, Arab houses, and because of snipers and fire that was coming in, the previous occupant had bored holes through the walls so you could travel the full length of the terrace houses through the holes in the wall, and you didn't need to go outside, because if you went outside you'd risk getting shot by, well, snipers, both Jewish and Arab. So we lived in there for a while, and there was constant fire coming from other parts of the town, mortar fire, small arms fire, things like that. And then we upped sticks and we went into a place called Haifa, which was a nice place because we were near the beach, and I remember we could swim in the sea. We had guards on the beach standing there watching while we went into the sea, and then when we came out the guards went in and we watched them. And then we were there a few weeks, and I was posted to the airport. I think it's called Lydia, something like that. And we were guarding the airport of Lydia. And we were there for a while. And I remember we were in these huts, but we couldn't go out at night in the compound we were in. We could go out, but you had to walk in certain areas, because if there was any light and you walked through that light, you took the risk of getting shot. So you could only walk with light pitch black, so no one could see you. If you went to the canteen, there was just a small canteen, that was all. There was nothing else where you could get cigarettes and a beer and probably a sandwich and a cup of tea and things like that. And then the order came through that we were leaving Palestine, as it would, that'd be 1948, wouldn't it? Palestine was getting its own rule. So we got into these trucks, and the order was that we were going down into Egypt. So we motored through the Sinai Desert to the Suez Canal. And we crossed the Suez Canal and we went into the into Egypt. We went to a place called Ishmaelia.
Whilst you were in Palestine, were there any casualties to the battalion?
No, I didn't see any. I didn't hear of any. I heard that they had been earlier on, but I personally didn't see any, although there was constant small arms fire coming our way, but we were in these houses, we were well sheltered. I don't remember anybody being hurt.
Were you at all nervous in Palestine?
No, I was all right. I just accepted the situation because by this time I was a trained soldier. So I accepted the situation, you know. I don't think I was bothered, no. No, it didn't bother me at all.
Did you have much contact with the Jews or Arabs?
To be quite honest, I never saw them, or the Arabs, only at a distance. With the, they were like an old man's land, if you like. The houses in front of us were only occupied by Jews, Arabs who were moving about. You know, I never saw anybody really. And we weren't allowed out because of the... You weren't allowed to go anywhere on your own because of the situation, you see.
So what were your living conditions like in Palestine?
Well, you can imagine, in ruined houses. It was rough. They were rough because they were old houses that had been knocked down, and the inside had been knocked about, and dusty, dirty. Not very nice, no. But I was a soldier and I accepted them things. We had rations delivered at one end of the terraced house, and they used to go through the old row delivering rations or tea, things like that.
Did anybody fall sick in Palestine?
No.
You
Not
said-
to my knowledge.
You said in Egypt you went to Ismailia?
Ismailia, yeah, in Egypt. Was it was a tented camp, and we weren't there very long. And then we moved to another camp in Egypt, a place at El Tahag. Now that was one terrible place, that. I would suggest to you that's the worst place I've ever been in my life. And I would never like to go there back there again.
What was so bad about it?
Well, we were out in the desert, in tents, and it seemed to be constantly windy, where the sun was blowing into your food, your tea, all your kit was constantly covered in a fine dust. We must have been breathing that in as well. The conditions were such that the latrines were just one big pit that had been dug out, something like 30 feet in diameter. God knows how deep it was, with a series of toilet seats all the way around, probably about 20 toilet seats. The flies, it was impossible to describe the amount of flies that were coming out of that thing. And the flies, as soon as you got a cup of tea, they were like kamikaze, straight in your tea. They were on your food. Oh, they were terrible. Some of the lads got that sandfly fever, they called it. It starts off like with shivering and cold, like influenza. And then we all got, I don't think it was dysentery, I put it down to diarrhea. We all had diarrhea.
Why had the authorities allowed such bad conditions?
I don't know. That was, funny enough, even...